This Weekend starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Weekend, with your host, Gordon Deal.
An age of scarcity. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Americans are unhappy about record-setting gas prices and broader inflation, but the deeper force at work is scarcity. We'll explain.
In-flight connectivity is changing. Hear what summer travelers will find regarding Wi-Fi on airplanes.
The NBA is having a problem with cursing. Hear the money players have paid out in fines for F-bombs during press conferences and interviews.
And following recent union votes at Starbucks and Amazon, observers say it might be time for new labor movement mascots.
We've seen a renewed interest, I would say, online, where a lot of organizing and rallying around people organizing has taken place. That's where, in my story, we look at this whole Jorts the Cat came up.
Allison Prang at the Wall Street Journal on Jorts the Cat versus Scabby the Rat. We start things off with a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. Why are Americans so gloomy about the economy? Jobs are plentiful, unemployment is back at pre-pandemic lows, yet sentiment is in the dumps. The obvious answer is inflation, and wages largely aren't keeping up. But Heather Long, economic columnist at the Washington Post, says there's a deeper force at work that is fundamental to why Americans are so upset: scarcity. Heather, explain.
Well, obviously, almost everyone has a story of an object or a good they were trying to get that was really hard to come by, whether it's they're waiting for a part to fix their car, or they're waiting for cabinets to show up for a kitchen renovation, or right now, of course, the many people in the nation are trying to find that baby formula. And so, you know, the ones that really stand out to people in the piece I describe, I went to an open house, you know, a few weeks ago, and I showed up and there were 100 people at this open house. And, goodness, you know, similar story. We've all heard these across the country. The house ends up getting 12 bids. And even the realtor said to me, okay, you know, obviously it sold for a lot more than what it was asking for, but what happened to the other 11 people who tried to bid on this house, or the other 99 people who, you know, walked through it at the open house? And that's where there's this feeling, I keep hearing these arguments from the White House, but the wages are up and people got all these payments during the pandemic. And yes, people do have more savings in their bank account, but it still feels like you can't get ahead when, even when you're willing to pay those higher prices for the house or the car or the baby formula, you still can't necessarily get it. You know, there's just this fierce competition or these supply chain glitches that just keep coming.
I think that was part of the point you were making about beyond housing. It's almost the perception, you know, when you walk into a store, you just have this feeling.
Exactly. And there's data to back it up. There's various groups that track the percentage of items that are in stock on shelves. And before the pandemic, it was pretty normal to have, say, about 5% of items off the shelves. And most of us never noticed. You know, maybe it would be gone for a few days and then restocked. But now it's been pretty typical throughout the pandemic. Of course, we all remember the toilet paper shortage in the early days. But, you know, even in the last few months, it's standard to have close to 15% of items that are not in stock right now. And, you know, again, that's where people are starting to notice. I often say it's not like there's no food at the grocery store, or, you know, that you walk into Target and there's nothing on the shelves.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, if you have a list and you want a specific brand or a specific item, people are noticing. You just can't get it. And yes, these feel like first world problems, but it's different. It's a very different feeling. As Americans, we're used to getting whatever we want on demand all the time. And we've now gone through 2 years where legitimately you cannot get everything you want, even if you're willing to pay an exorbitant price.
We're speaking with Heather Long, economic columnist at The Washington Post. Her piece is called Americans Are Stuck in an Age of Scarcity and They Don't Like It. You referenced, too, a lot of everyday life remains out of control. And I guess that's adding to this.
It is, yeah. I mean, there's this whole field of behavioral psychology and behavioral economics. And I think it's important to remember that as we're debating why are Americans so fixated on the negatives, why the White House keeps saying, why don't people celebrate the good jobs news? It's so easy to get a job. People are getting raises. Why are people so fixated on the inflation and the scarcity and the negatives? And several psychologists reminded me, you have to understand that almost all of us have basically been living through 2 years of what's called chronic stress. And for some people, it's been traumatic stress. If a loved one obviously passed away or had a really bad case, or with these issues, people who went through those issues with childcare, elder care problems. And so, basically it turns people, a period of this kind of chronic stress for over 2 years, turns people almost like into a depression state. And when you're in that kind of a state, you tend to focus more on negative news. So that's kind of what I was trying to remind people, is that there's a psychological impact here that we can't forget from this pandemic. And, I think part of the issue is we all just thought, oh, it'll go away. We keep being told, it's all right. In a few more months, it'll be gone. It's all these problems are temporary. Well, we've been told that for a year now. And they're just, now we've got the war in Ukraine, now we've got the Fed hiking rates, now we've got the baby formula shortage. It's just, the problems keep coming.
That's Heather Long, economic columnist at The Washington Post. Coming up next, taxpayer subsidies for stadiums are back.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. What's old is new is the case when it comes to public subsidies for sports stadiums and arenas. Even as sports leagues get richer and economic studies pile up that reject any gains from infusing public money into sports venues, the dams holding back the subsidies have sprung massive leaks. So says Dan Kaplan, reporter at The Athletic. Dan, what are we seeing?
Well, we're seeing public money being expended towards sports facilities or committed towards sports facilities. The most prominent example would be the Buffalo Bills, the New York State, in Erie County committing $850 million. And by some estimates, it's more like a billion once you factor in property tax exemptions and things of that nature. But it's not just Buffalo, it's Tennessee, it's Washington, the Commanders in Virginia. The state of Maryland has committed $1.2 billion to the Camden Yards Sports Complex, which houses the Baltimore Orioles and Baltimore Ravens. It's come in a big rush, and I think there'll be more of it.
Well, you say, too, that these things are tied to low returns. How come, or what's the evidence?
Well, you talk to any sports economist not tied to a particular project or sports endeavor, they'll tell you that putting public money into a sports stadium doesn't get a return because it's just not a good investment. If there's not a stadium, consumers will spend their money elsewhere. The taxes will still be there for the municipality. So if you don't spend it on the Buffalo Stadium, the money can be spent in education, can be spent elsewhere, and fans will still spend their money at restaurants, bars, movies, things like that. So when you hear from the Buffalo Bills and state of New York that every penny will get repaid, that's really hard to believe.
Wow. We're speaking with Dan Kaplan. He covers the business of sports for The Athletic. This story is called Taxpayers Beware, Subsidies for Sports Venues Back in Vogue Despite Low Returns. I know how the sports teams generally pitch it, right? They're going to create jobs and, I guess, a certain amount of city pride, right? And then the cities say, I don't know what, same thing?
Look, there are certain intangible reasons beyond economics that you can make an argument for the subsidies. If you're Buffalo and you're trying to brand yourself as a city that businesses would want to come to, and that families and people would want to relocate to, having an NFL franchise is a big winner.
Okay.
So there, it's hard to put a financial figure on that. But it's certainly there. Whether it's $850 million worth, that it's hard to believe, but that's what the state of New York decided.
So to your point, then, let's say, the city of Buffalo is coughing up roughly $1 billion, but I guess there might be impacts that are not directly tied to that. So you reference it, like maybe businesses decide, you know what, I want to be in a city with an NFL franchise, we're moving there. That's not credited toward
That's the so-called intangibles. Okay. that you have with any what makes a place desirable, and it's also what kind of branding does the city get when its name is in the new is on sports broadcasts and newspapers during the NFL season, and people see it. It's invaluable advertising. So there are certain benefits that can't be quantified. But the $850 million is a record for a sports subsidy.
Thanks, Dan. Dan Kaplan, reporter at The Athletic. Coming up next, new mascots for the labor movement.
Dell Technologies wants to celebrate all your hard work with these Small Business Month specials. Get great value offers on powerful laptops, desktops, and servers with Windows 11 Pro starting at $499, plus top monitors and docks, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. It's the perfect time to upgrade so you and your team can stay secure from anywhere. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to refresh your business tech with these Small Business Month specials. Dell recommends Windows 11 Pro for business.
Thanks for joining us. The U.S. is seeing a renewed interest in labor activism at corporations both small and large, including recent union votes at Starbucks and Amazon. More activity also means more weird mascots. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
Sweeping across the country, renewed interest in labor activism, be it Starbucks, Apple, or Amazon. What does that activity mean? Well, more goofy mascots. Here with the story is Allison Prang of the Wall Street Journal. Allison, did this all start with that giant blow-up rat you occasionally see roadside or outside certain picketing areas?
That's a great question. So Scabby the Rat has been around for a while, I believe decades even. But we've seen a renewed interest, I would say, online, where a lot of organizing and rallying around people organizing has taken place. That's where, in my story, we forgot this whole Jorts the Cat came up. Jorts emerged from this Reddit post where someone was posting about their workplaces to Cass, Gene, and Jorts. And Jorts was portrayed as a simple cat. You know, he struggled to open doors, and he got a lot of attention on the internet. And then his Twitter profile popped up, and he, as we know in the story, is very in favor of unions. He likes to applaud organizing efforts. He's very pro workers' rights. And he, as someone I talked to described it, has become sort of a one-stop shop for updates on the labor movement. So we've seen him even transcend off the web and into real life. He's popped up on signs, or people have taken inspiration from him and put a paw print on their sign, or an orange cat sticker on their sign, or even printed out a photo of him and his comrade Gene and put that on a strike sign they were going to use. So he's kind of come offline, and he's been this new sort of big proponent of the labor movement. He has more Twitter followers, for example, than the AFL-CIO. So we've seen newer examples of this. We reported on an example where someone brought a chicken to a labor, rally or what it was. So, and like I said, Scabby the Rat has been around for a long time, and people, there's still demand for Scabby. So there are numerous mascots here.
Getting back to Jorts the Cat, so who's controlling what happens with him online?
This is a great question. We don't know. When I was messaging with Jorts, he even was responding to me as a cat. You know, he claims to type his own tweets with his toe beans, which I'm more of a dog person. You know, I discovered that toe beans are those little pads of skin on the bottom of cat's paws. So Jorts really, really wants to stay as Jorts and not be tied to a human. And I think people really like that about him. I think that makes it fun for people. You know, you can get behind anyone from even both sides of the aisle sometimes can kind of get behind an animal or a pet. You know, America really loves their dogs, their cats, their pets. They're part of the family. And so I think the fact that Jorts is a cat and, you know, stays in tune as a cat when he's communicating with people is kind of made this fun. I talked to Sarah Nelson, who's head of this major flight attendants union. She's a big name in the labor movement and she in organized labor. And she said, you know, it's key that Jorts stay a cat. You know, once we put a human with him, the magic is going to go away.
So there really is a live Jorts somewhere. Do we know where he is now?
I believe his Twitter profile says that he's not in Philadelphia, so I don't know if that gives any clues, but I don't know specifically what his workplace is. Like I said, I don't know the human tied to him. So he really keeps in character in his online presence and then communicates with people as though he's this feline.
We're speaking with Allison Prang of the Wall Street Journal. Allison, getting back to Scabby a little bit, that is a large kind of plastic rat, blow-up rat that's been around for a while. People are still demanding that he show up places.
Yeah, Scabby's still in high demand. You know, there's a website that touts you can get your Scabby the Rat between, I believe, it's 6 feet and 25 feet tall. Some of these rats are just massive in size and can really be a dominating presence at a protest or something like that. So Scabby is still quite popular, and I think he's one that a lot of people are familiar with in terms of organized labor.
So in your research for this story, does it seem that these mascots, be them real or plastic or whatever, are going to show up in more Instagram stories and different things online to help push forward unions?
It's a great question. You know, a lot of the organizing that's been done recently at places like Starbucks and Amazon is by young people. You know, young people are really energized around this sort of modern labor movement, I think, in a way that we probably haven't seen in a while, and especially because organizing has been happening at those big high-profile companies, you know, so it's drawing a lot of media attention and whatnot. And so I think the fact that, especially with Jorts, that we see him be a presence on Twitter, and I believe he also has an Instagram, you know, that's where he's sort of meeting people where they're at. He's meeting a lot of young people where they're at, and he's garnering a lot of attention. Even sharing the story yesterday on Twitter, you know, I got hundreds of likes on it and hundreds of retweets. You know, it was very, very popular, and Jorts shared it as well. And it I think, shows that, you know, a lot of activism can take place online and on social media platforms.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Wall Street Journal reporter Allison Prang. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect? The taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Well, there's a growing concern that executives and employees are getting out of sync, executives wanting their people to return to the office, while many, if not most, employees prefer to work from home. How can things get better? We're joined by Rob Enderle, principal analyst and founder of The Enderle Group. Rob, what's the problem?
Well, right now, the problem with the hybrid workplace, especially with regard to the people that are predominantly working from home, is that they're not getting the social interaction they once got when they were going into the office. And this is particularly problematic for new employees who haven't built up the relationships that they're going to need to advance in the company or even understand how things work. Because remember, when you were working in the office, you got to meet people, you got to go out to lunch with people, often had dinner with people, you might have hobbies you've discovered and you do things together. So you got this sense of community and capability that you just don't get when you're working at home. And then of course we also have the issue with it. It's a little uncertain on whether you're going to remain at home or you're going to be forced back to work. So it's really a level of uncertainty that's in place. And we've certainly seen from social media that a lot of the people that are being forced back to work and back into the office are saying, yeah, we're not going to do that. And they're looking for new jobs or quitting outright.
In one of the breakouts here in your piece, you said that the open plan or cubicles aren't working and that we need a flexible space. But what does that flexible space look like?
Well, so what if they do go into the office, the employees need a place where they can get together, collaborate, and blend the people that are remote with the people that are still remote with the people that are there. And the huddle rooms aren't working because the way the cameras are set up, the remote people can't see the faces of the people they're talking to because those people are sitting around the office, sitting around the table, often at a distance, the camera's up against the wall. So they don't feel like they're really engaging. In fact, what a lot of folks are doing when they go into the office, they're just getting on a Zoom call. They're not using the huddle room, so everybody's on the Zoom call, and that tends to work. But they still need to find a quiet place in the office where they can do that so they're not disturbing the other people that are working there that aren't on a conference or collaboration call. So the workspace still needs to be re-engineered so that when you have this blended environment, the remote people don't feel like they're remote, and the people that are on premise can work together and include those remote people but not disturb the rest of the office. So open plan's too open and the sound goes every place. Huddle rooms are too closed, and the video conferencing camera technology doesn't allow the remote people to feel like they're there. Not only that, it even feels unnatural for the people that are actually there because they can't see the remote people and interact with them. A lot of strange stuff's going on. For instance, this week I heard that there were people saying, okay, what we'll do is get everybody on their cell phone, they use their cell phone camera, and that camera will then show their face to everybody else, but everybody's getting that shot up the nose of the people that are holding their cell phones, which isn't particularly attractive or conducive to collaboration either. So this is a serious problem.
So we need better cameras, like in the office, or what are you suggesting?
Well, we need a way to blend the people that are remote with the people that are work, and we also need a way to get the people that are remote to feel like they're part of a company, not just somebody that's going into some ephemeral a virtual office someplace and talking to heads and never getting to meet the people. I mean, one of the big problems is that they're not getting the social interaction that they would like. The after hour stuff, the lunch meetings, the things that make a company where you actually find people that become friends and relationships. I mean, I remember the first job I had in tech was with Rome Systems, and they had a great place to work department, and that department went out of their way to make sure that we had opportunities to play volleyball together, to play water sports, tennis, you name it, and they spent a great deal of effort trying to create a kind of a social fabric where it wasn't just work; it was a relationship. Your company was kind of your family. To a certain extent, a lot of that's been lost over the years, but it was particularly bad during the pandemic.
Thanks, Rob. Rob Enderle from the Enderle Group. Coming up next, today's Wi-Fi on the plane. High interest debt can put you into a financial hole, and a lot of people are too embarrassed to ask for help. That's where Upstart comes in. Upstart can help you get one fixed monthly payment with a clear payoff date, whether it's for paying off credit cards, consolidating high interest debt, or funding personal expenses. You can even receive funds in as fast as one business day, from $1,000 to $50,000. And checking your rate at Upstart has to be the easiest process ever invented. The questions are simple, the drop-down boxes are user-friendly, and the application took less than 5 minutes. In addition, all your responses are encrypted and do not affect your credit score, so you have complete security and privacy. Don't wait. Check your rate today at upstart.com/Gordon. That's upstart.com/Gordon to check your rate today. Don't forget to use our URL to let them know we sent you. Loan amounts will be determined based on your credit, income, and certain other information provided in your loan application. Again, upstart.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Americans are returning to the skies in large numbers, and many of them will find that in-flight Wi-Fi has changed a bit. since their last time up in the air. Here's how from Rob Peguerero, tech columnist for USA Today. Rob, what should we know?
So first of all, Wi-Fi in planes, it actually does work. I know we love to complain about it, but it has gotten a lot better. Two things that have changed more recently that I really like. Number one, standardized pricing. It used to be you would board the flight, log in, and then you would see what you might pay. And it could be $20 or $30 on a transcon, no knowing beforehand. Now, a lot of airlines, American Airlines is the big outlier, have standardized on $10 or less on a domestic flight. So you know what you're going to cost. There's no drama to it. And the other thing is free messaging, which usually they'll say, they'll phrase this in terms of you can have free messaging on WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger. On United, where I've tried it, a bunch of other things work, like the encrypted messaging app Signal, Slack. I even have Twitter notifications come through, I guess, and I can at least read Twitter direct messages. So it's nice that even if you don't want to pay for the Wi-Fi, you can at least send a message to somebody, or iMessage through Apple, that's another one, saying, hey, my flight's delayed, but I'll be there in 20 minutes. See you then.
Wow. So what are some of the, issues for in-flight Wi-Fi?
So the big one is just when it doesn't work. And sometimes it is just a temporary thing where the plane is banked this way or that way. Or one analyst pointed out that in certain angles, the tail will block the signal that has to go from the satellite in geostationary orbit to this dome. You can see it on the top of a jet. And in that case, it'll be a little longer for it to clean up. Other times, it is some mess up with the system on board, and it just won't work at all. I've had a few flights over the last year where they said, sorry, no connectivity. The other thing to watch for is geographic limitations. Some satellite services don't work outside the U.S. If it's an air-to-ground service, which is what Wi-Fi used to be on every airplane, that's definitely only over the U.S., and a lot of those don't work below 10,000 feet.
Okay. We're speaking with Rob Peguerero, technology columnist for USA Today. His piece is called Wi-Fi on the Plane. Here's how in-flight connectivity is changing and costing. What about like tiers of service? Can you pay for super fast Wi-Fi? Is there such a thing?
That's what a lot of analysts think we're heading towards. Right now, most airlines don't give you the Wi-Fi for free. JetBlue is one exception. They've always done that from the start, and it is nice to have that. What's more likely, you already have a sort of tiered structure in that your messaging is free on most airlines. And then if you want to have full-fledged access, it's a little bit more. But, you know, obviously airlines love to sell different tiers. You've got economy minus, economy plus, premium economy, yeah. Business class, whatever. So why not do the same thing for Wi-Fi? You could certainly see a situation where if you're paying for that big seat at the front of the plane, then the Wi-Fi is free. Or if you fly too much with them and you have frequent flyer status, you get a discount or the Wi-Fi is free.
That's Rob Peguerero, technology columnist for USA Today. Coming up next, a more interesting dog show than the one we all know. Dell Technologies wants to celebrate all your hard work with these Small Business Month specials. Get great value offers on powerful laptops, desktops, and servers with Windows 11 Pro starting at $499, plus top monitors and docks, all with easy financing options through Dell Financial Services. It's the perfect time to upgrade so you and your team can stay secure from anywhere. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL to refresh your business tech with these Small Business Month specials. Dell recommends Windows 11 Pro for business.
Hey, glad you're with us. If you're a pet owner who rolls their eyes at the Westminster Kennel Club dog show, maybe you'd prefer the alternative. This is a contest where you don't see the preening canines who get shampoo baths, nails trimmed, and their fur groomed to a gorgeous sheen. Jim Carlton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says that the Farm Dog of the Year contest, good looks are actually a drawback. Jim, take us through it.
Well, the American Farm Bureau Federation wanted to basically give some recognition to those hardworking dogs on the farms and ranches of America that really don't get a lot of respect, like the fancier dogs do at the Westminster Dog Show, for example. These are scruffy, kind of dirty dogs that are running around chasing cows and sheep, and they do really a lot of essential work on the farm. And so the Farm Bureau started a contest 5 years ago, and it's called the Farm Dog of the Year contest, and entries are underway right now.
Mm. Listen, and this is one of those, if you're well-groomed and you got that nice shiny coat, you're getting dismissed on day one. You're not even going to qualify. It's not your contest, yeah. Right?
Right. In fact, one of the judges told me, says, well, you know what? I don't want to sound like I'm biased, but, you know, if I see a dog that looks pretty fancy, I'm going to probably not give it a vote because it doesn't look like it's worked very hard. And she actually said, you know, and I'm just going to say right now, a Maltese is probably not going to get my vote.
Who else is not getting a vote? Did you say that there was a dachshund or something that, that thought he had a shot?
Well, the weird thing is that a dachshund actually did get a vote. And okay, so that, you know, everybody knows that these little dachshunds, they bark a lot. So there was a dachshund on a farm that would ride around on a golf cart with the farmer and just yapping at the cows and, you know, get out and yap. And so the judge told me this, says, you know, I got to give it to this little Winnie dog. So I upvoted the Winnie dog because he was just so scrappy.
Tell the story that was the heartwarming one of, what is it, a dog that kind of stepped in and helped an owner who got, like, bumped by a cow or knocked over by a cow, right?
Yeah, this was Doe Sheeran in Flatonia, Texas. This was a few years ago, and his Australian Shepherd, Woody, was just a pup, 8 months old at the time. And Joe was out pulling a calf out of a ditch. And the mom was nearby and got all Mama Grizzly or Mama Cow and attacked him and knocked him on the ground and was going to probably do some damage. And little Woody just kind of instinctively came in and started yapping and barking and, you know, got the cow off of Joe and saved his life. Woody won actually the very first farm dog of the year in 2020.
Wow. We're speaking with Jim Carlton, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. He's got a good story that's called The Working Class Alternative to the Westminster Dog Show. I love, too, you said these dogs are low maintenance, right? They don't really care what you think about them. They're just here to work.
Yeah. There's a dog named Flint in Utah, and the owner, Beth, she is telling me that this dog, she actually said, you know, the dog knows more about livestock than I do. And she actually believes that, you know, the dog is actually smarter than her when it comes to cows. And to give you a little story, one time 150 of their heifers had broken loose from a pasture, and they got a call from the local police and said, come get your cows. They're all over the place. So she went outside, pointed to the cows, and looked down at Flint and said, go get them. Flint went to the front of the herd, corralled them, and brought them all back into the pasture. So Flint alone got that whole herd back in.
Wow. This is really the Farm Dog of the Year contest is really all about Australian Shepherds and Border Collies, right? Don't they dominate?
They really do dominate. I mean, there's every now and then the one that kind of breaks through, you know, some Labradors, and, you know, they get, you know, some German Shepherds. They get even pit bull. I've heard actually I actually have had a few interests with pit bulls. I was kind of surprised to hear that. But, I mean, the Australian Shepherd, though, and the Border Collies dominate because they they're kind of bred to herd. There's a Border Collie named Fit, which is the current Farm Dog of the Year out of Florida. And Fit can not only herd sheep and cattle, but also dives off docks. Fit knows how to do a running dive off a dock, about 40 feet. So that's pretty cool.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Carlton, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, finding basketball players for their potty mouths.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
We'll finish with this. Sometime in the last year, NBA executives noticed something alarming. Press conferences peppered with profanities and F-bombs flying freely. So memos were sent, warnings issued, fingers wagged. SI.com says the message, curtail the cursing or pay the price. Then came the fines. Knicks forward Julius Randle hit for $25,000 in early January for twice saying that he wanted his critics to shut the F up, considered by the NBA as an egregious use of profane language. The next week, next star Kevin Durant hit for $15,000 for calling the schedule effed up. That's a quote the league considered merely profane, though clearly not egregious given the lesser fine. All told, players have put at least $95,000 in the NBA's swear jar this season, the most for any season in the last two decades, and there are still several more weeks of playoffs to go. Many more players have been warned or fined privately, even for quotes in print publications.
as part of the NBA's new War on Wickedness. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.